So good morning. I'm State Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance Policy Committee, and I'm calling this meeting of the committee to order. Welcome to members of the public. This meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, and the meeting agenda and materials are posted on our committee website, so I'd encourage you to check that out. We're going to start, as usual, by having the clerk take the roll. So Ms. Chambers, if you could please do that.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Bennett, excused. Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney. Representative Damon?
Present.
Representative Juergens? Representative Juergens? Representative Cotiza-Witun?
Present.
Representative Morrison?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Present.
And Representative Wolgamott. Representative Wolgamott. Okay, we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. And I should acknowledge for everyone that there's both a lot going on. I also note that it's 8:30 on a Saturday. And but I'm sure that we're gonna be joined by, I know there's a lot going on, folks will be joining us. Representative Pryor, if you could please move approval of our minutes of our most recent meeting from April 8th of 2021.
So moved.
Thank you. Any additions or corrections, members? Wait just a second. Okay, so hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from the April 8th meeting, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so the motion prevails and our minutes from April 8th are adopted. Thank you, Representative Pryor, members. So so members of the public and members of this committee, we are assembled here today to review some budget agreements. Just to kind of set the context for us all to remind us of our committee overseeing early development care and learning has a budget oversight of budgets in a couple different agencies. And so when our committee last met, we sent a bill to Ways and Means, a budget bill, but that bill was then broken up into two pieces and combined with budget bills from the Health and the Human Services Committees, and then also with the budget bill from the Education Finance Committee. There were conference committees that met. I served on the HHS Conference Committee, which then was converted into a working group after the regular session ended. Our Vice Chair, Representative Pryor, served on the Education Conference Committee. Chair Dabney, who serves on our committee, was the chair of that committee for the House. And there's been a lot of negotiations, a lot that's gone on. Of course, there's complexities in our area because we do connect with those multiple agencies. There are some provisions that were carried in our House Education bill that were also carried in the Senate HHS bill. So we have a lot to deal with that. And then as members will remember, there's significant federal funds that have come to this area, and we've had to sort out how all that works. Today we'll be reviewing the budget agreements in those two areas, and in particular, the areas that affect early childhood. I'm really pleased with where things have ended up. I should note kind of the piece that I'm most excited about is the prospects for long-term innovation and reform. This, as members of this committee will know, is an area that's been really fragmented and it's posed a lot of challenges. We talked about the Office of Legislative Auditor report from a few years ago about the challenges that fragmentation poses. And we also just know that as a society, as a country, this is a time of life that we have not prioritized as much as we should. So there's several pieces that we're going to hear about that our committee advanced in terms of innovation that are going to be moving forward, which I'm really excited about. I'll also note that we have a significant increase in rates for the Child Care Assistance Program. We're going to hear about that. That's tremendously exciting as well. We're securing at least another couple years for the voluntary pre-K program. Some disappointment not to be able to move that even further, but at least we'll have that for another couple of years. The committee members will recall that early learning scholarships are a high priority for us as well. And unfortunately, that's an area where we advanced spending out of the House There was not state general fund spending coming out of the Senate, and that's an area that did not receive investment. So there's quite a lot that we still need to do going forward, and I'll probably have some more remarks at the end of the committee hearing. But there's a lot of really exciting work that's gone on. I'll note as well that in the policy area, but connected to funding, the work of the Family Child Care Task Force, led by Representative Wozlawick, Representative Damuth serves on that as well. There's a ton that's happened in that area, and I think we can be really excited about supporting our family child care providers as well. There's a lot more. What I want to do is I'm going to have Representative Pryor comment a bit. So again, I was really focused on the HHS area. I'm serving on that working group. I'd like to ask Representative Pryor just to comment briefly, if she can, on kind of what was going on the education side. And then we're really honored to be joined by our commissioners of human services and education. And so we'll turn things to them as well. But Representative Pryor, if you have anything that you want to share with our team about what was happening on the education side of the world, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The education side of things, I think as people may have seen in the newspapers, the reports on it is between the House and the Senate version of the E-12 bill, there's a chasm, a gap in how the Senate was funding education versus how our House and the governor's office recommended for funding education. And so when you start with that big gap, you know that it's gonna be a tough road to hoe to bring around agreement when it's so far behind. So when the differences are so great to start with. What emerged after a great deal of discussion was the Senate had proposed using public dollars for private schools in terms of what they called a scholarship. And that was a non-starter for both the House and the Senate. So we spent a lot of time negotiating away from that point because that was a lot of available money. And then we quickly zeroed in on that being off the table, what was gonna go on in terms of the the formula and how much of the target that we had to allocate would just be on the basic education formula that that funds all schools across the state versus specific areas, one of them being early childhood and the VPK slots, the voluntary pre-K slots that we have 4,000 of them in Minnesota, all across the state. And so that was certainly an area of negotiation, was centered around the formula, other priorities, more focused targeted priorities in education. So I'll just kind of go to the net result, which is that most of the money, most of the target is on the formula in the education bill. We do continue, as Chair Pinto said, we do continue to fund our voluntary pre-K, but that still every 2 years is, they'll be up for renewal again. So in a sense, in terms of the early childhood, we did not make any advancements. It was more for the scholarships, we're still at the same place with scholarships, no additional funding for early childhood scholarships. And no ongoing funding for those voluntary pre-K slots. So those are kind of the big areas in education. So no additional funding in the budgets for early childhood in education. Kind of like we ended up with zero on that line, which for me was a great disappointment. I can also say that though, as negotiations worked out, we did have some things that were moved out of education, and which is great because I think they are getting funded in other areas. And so it's three aspects that are gonna be funded, I think, through federal dollars. And I can start with actually our kindergarten assessment, which is something that we discussed early on in our negotiations. If the Commissioner Mueller is willing to discuss that with us, that how that worked out, that it's not in our bill as a line item, but we are going to be looking at those and how to improve are the kindergarten assessments. And I don't have my notes in front of me of the meeting, and I don't know if the commissioner has any better recollection of it than I do. But, you know, that was something we, in our committee, we do want to see systems improvements so that the quality of the work that we do and our investment in the federal dollars is always spent in the way that really reflects our values. And I think as we looked at the kindergarten assessment, that was an important area, was to make sure that our assessments are of that high quality and really, really do capture the whole child. So if Mr. Chair, if I may yield the floor to Commissioner Mueller, and if as long as I'm not putting the commissioner on the spot.
I think what I might do, if it's okay, Representative Pryor and Commissioner, is that maybe I'll have you wrap up, then we'll have, and then as part of Commissioner Mueller's comments, she can address if she's in position to do so, address anything she may want to about the kindergarten readiness assessment, if that's okay with you, Representative Pryor, as opposed to doing that right now.
That's probably okay. a better.
That's fine. Yeah, because then she can include that in any other comments she wants to make. But I really I want to thank you so much, and Chair Dabney as well. I was going to ask him, I know that he's on now, if he has anything that he wants to add as a member of this committee, and then as the chair of the conference committee and the working group. I'm not sure if he's in position to do so, but Chair Dabney, is there anything that you'd like to add to Representative Pryor's comments?
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and my apologies for logging in a few minutes late. And first, let me thank Representative Pryor for her presence on the conference committee working group. She was able to provide not only expertise and insight on early childhood issues, which was very valuable, but also had a great vision of what are the dynamics at play, how do we advance the interests of early childhood through this negotiation process. And I was very lucky to have a strong team coming out of the House, and Representative Pryor was an important part of that. You were as well, Mr. Chair. As you know, we talked several times through the process, me checking in, getting some background, getting some insights, sharing about what was going on in HHS versus K-12 in the interest of little kids and their families. So I appreciate that partnership as well. She hit it. The one thing I want to add, and I don't know if you touched on this, is our support for the three children's museums that we're providing state funding for in the bill. These aren't in the early childhood committee's jurisdiction, I understand, but they are targeted at the right age range. And they're the Children's Museum of Southeast Minnesota. There's another one in Grand Rapids, and then the Works Museum in Bloomington. And what's important about this is two parts. One, these provide critical early play-based informal education opportunities. It's, you know, you've talked articulately and passionately about building those little neurons, and this is a great way to do that in a structured, intentional, play-based way. So that's number one, but number two is we condition the aid on it being used to provide access to those museums for low-income families. So families who otherwise would not be able to afford access for their children to those museums are able to go and take their kids and have those enriching experiences because of the funding we're able to provide them and the access that provides. And it's a small amount of money. It's a wee little part of the bill, but hopefully it brings a lot of joy to a whole bunch of little kids. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Dabney. And I do believe those children's museums are disproportionately used by the youngest kids. You may think I may have to try to pull those into our jurisdiction in the future. But so watch out. But I'm so grateful to Chair Dabney, and absolutely he was keeping he and I were in close touch, and to Representative Pryor and to him. I know that they were pushing so hard for early childhood and early learning throughout those negotiations. And again, we through some coordination, I think we were able to score some particular wins for young kids, partly through the coordination across these budgets, to move some of the pieces over the HHS side as well. And so grateful to both of you and to that team. So what I'd like to do is turn things to Commissioner Harpstead and then Commissioner Mueller. And I'm really embarrassed that this is actually the, I believe, the first time the commissioners have been with our committee, and that is 100% on me. They've been really generous with their time, and Commissioner Ricker before Commissioner Mueller, and then their teams have been just incredibly hardworking and so responsive. We've heard from their teams repeatedly, but I had not reached out previously. And again, that's my embarrassment. But I so much enjoyed the chance to work with Commissioner Harpstead over the last month, and then with both their teams along the way as well. Again, just mostly with Commissioner Harpstead because of my role in HHS Conference Committee. So in any case, Commissioner Harpstead, I'd love to hear from you, and then we'll hear from Commissioner Mueller. Thanks so much, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and good morning, Chair Pinto and committee members. I'm Jody Harpstead, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Since COVID began, investments in childcare have made a difference for thousands of children, families, and childcare providers. The investments helped Minnesota support its economy, enabled our emergency response, and ensured the safety and well-being of children while keeping childcare programs open. Through cross-agency coordination provided through the Children's Cabinet, we've been able to respond quickly and vigorously to the COVID-19 pandemic, preventing childcare closures and positioning Minnesota for economic recovery. Examples have included utilizing CARES Act funds to boost the Child Care Assistance Program, known as CCAP, by offsetting the costs of waivers that gave flexibility and stability for families and providers, prioritizing childcare providers for testing and vaccination. Since July of 2020, COVID-19 public health support funds have enabled the availability of childcare through the pandemic, federal funds used to provide these grants. As a result of these efforts and programs, Minnesota did not experience major losses of childcare compared to other states. As of September 2020, less than 25% of Minnesota childcare providers had closed, compared to over 75% in many states. Through Federal Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, known as CERSA, Minnesota families on waiting lists for CCAP began getting help paying for childcare so they could work. Most families getting assistance through CCAP are essential workers. Now, with the package before you, the childcare industry and families who rely on it will benefit by being able to work and have access to safe, more affordable childcare coming out of COVID. Children will benefit from environments that support their learning and development. All of us will benefit from the support that childcare providers make to our economic recovery and the benefits to our current and future workforce. Families with low income will have increased access to childcare. A rate increase for the CCAP program means that families with low income can access more providers and not have to pay as much out of pocket, and the providers who serve them will have more actual costs covered. It brings Minnesota to federal compliance by setting better rates relative to the recent market rate survey. An extra boost to rates for infants and toddlers and informal caregivers, known as legal non-licensed providers, means that families have more options and hard-to-find care is more affordable. Investment in basic sliding fee, including the temporary reprioritization of waiting lists, should result in almost 2,000 more families being served during the next 3 years. Child care providers will continue to be supported and stabilized, and new child care providers able to open to address the need for access to child care across Minnesota. These investments are made possible through federal funds received through the American Rescue Plan. Providers are provisions from this bill that will stabilize the child care market and improve access to child care include grants to stabilize the child care market with direct payments to child care providers, funds to further develop the childcare workforce through grants targeted to financially challenged individuals, higher education scholarships and retention grants, funds to increase the supply of childcare for families through a system of supports to help new childcare programs start up, grants to address childcare facility renovation and enhancement, childcare business training and innovation grants to promote family childcare shared service agreements. This bill also includes funds for validation study of Minnesota's quality rating and improvement system, Parent Aware, and funding to support family, friend, and neighbor providers. Initiatives related to improving early care and education governance and systems, including efforts related to updating Minnesota's licensing regulations. These efforts will position Minnesota well for the future and in our economic recovery. The proposed Family Child Care Regulation Modernization Project aligns with the task force's recommendations to develop a risk-based, data-driven, tiered violation system, a process for full and abbreviated licensing inspections, and update and modernizing licensing standards for family child care. There are additional provisions, this just goes on and on in this bill, that align with the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations, including creation of an ombudsperson's office for family child care, development of orientation training for family child care license applicants, additional flexibility for special family child care providers, allowing up to 4 licenses at the same location, establishment of a work group to identify models of child care not currently allowed under existing statutes, and creation of a family child care training advisory committee. These investments are historic and transformational to supporting our children, families, child care providers, and the early care and education system in our state. They recognize the need for families to have a mixed delivery system, the need for child care businesses to be supported, and the need for the workforce to be adequately compensated for the important work they do caring for children every day. We're grateful for the work of the members of this committee and staff and the collaboration and partnership of child care providers and workers who are the backbone of our state's emergency response and the workforce behind our workforce. We look forward to the passage of this bill and implementation of these changes to improve our child care system in ways that serve our state now and into the future. And as Chair Pinto has reminded me throughout our budget discussions, supporting young children in these early years of learning and development is the most important thing we can do. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for that last sentence, especially because you're right. It warms my heart. And thank you so much again to you and your team for your incredible work. And actually, that was an especially nice summary of the content of the work. And as folks can tell from the commissioner's description, there really is just a lot in there. Of course, it really helps to have had that that federal funding. And I think that we've really made the very most use of it in partnership and in conversation. So really good stuff. Thank you so much again to you and to your team. And Commissioner Mueller, turning to you, welcome again to our committee, and I'm so grateful to you for your work. So please share your thoughts.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Heather Mueller, and I'm honored to serve as the Minnesota's Commissioner of Education. And I thank you for having me here this morning, and I'm grateful for your partnership and the partnership and advocacy of both Representative Pryor and Chair Dabney in prioritizing what matters most to our youngest Minnesotans and their families. And I'm happy to be here to be able to share my support for the bills that are before this committee. From an education perspective, setting our students up for success starts the moment that they're born. We know that for all children, their birth to age 8 years are critically important to setting them up for more positive academic and social emotional outcomes later. High quality early childhood education programs can have a profound effect on a child's future and starts with supporting families and providing equitable access to learning opportunities. An investment in early childhood education carries a high return of investment for all of us. And actually what I mean by that is that if we are able to provide proactive supports in both in academics, social emotional learning, physical and mental health well-being for our children in their earliest years, then we need to be less reactive to their concerns in our K-12 settings. And they are often reduced or eliminated if we are able to do that up front and be more proactive. But more importantly, this is just the right thing to do for our children and for our families. And for those reasons, I'm glad that House File 2 ensures that our youngest learners do not lose access to high quality free pre-kindergarten, which is VPK, by maintaining those 4,000 seats that would have otherwise been eliminated. Demand for this program is almost double the amount that has been funded. So while I would have liked to have seen the agreement fund the seats on an ongoing basis, this investment in VPK is still critically important for our collective work to close the gap in opportunity, in access, in participation, and in representation. Now, given these gaps, we know that our work is not done and we have more work to do. And these bills are a step in the right direction. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to be with you this morning. And we know that the high quality early learning opportunities are needed now more than ever, particularly for those that are hardest hit by our COVID-19 pandemic. I'm grateful for your commitment to ensure that we do everything that we can to set our youngest Minnesotans up for success. And I'm looking forward to our continued partnership in ensuring that every student is participating in programs that help them thrive. And I think one of those places is what Representative Pryor talked about earlier, and that is our ability to be able to start with a place where, although it wasn't included in the budget, we were able to include that in some of the federal funds around the KEA. And knowing that if we are able to have an assessment, an early assessment as students are coming into kindergarten or are leaving preschool, we have a sense of, as they are coming in, how to individualize our supports for students. And so that means that we have a better sense of what we are able to do proactively, again, walking into their K-12, into their K-12 experience. And so we are partnering to ensure that we have a growth and expansion in the use of the KEA, and are very clear on how that information and data is going to be able to help our students thrive in their first experience in a K-12 setting.
Commissioner, thank you so much. To clarify for folks, or just to confirm, so KEA is the Kindergarten Entry Assessment, and that's a piece that we had carried originally, although Commissioner is saying, although it's not moving forward in the bill specifically, I really appreciate Commissioner that the department is going to be able to pursue that, as you said, through other federal funding, through other means. That again is part of the reform and innovation that I referenced at the very beginning. That's a really important piece of that, as for members of the public to understand that that's a way of kind of knowing how did things work previously in different programs that children may have been in, and how can we make sure that they have the very best setup for kindergarten they can. So thank you so much, and thanks especially for the work for those VPK slots. To confirm for members of the public, there are 4,000 slots for pre-K programs that would be going away in communities all throughout our state. And I believe it's so critical they continue. I know that that was a real struggle. And so thank you so much for your work for that, and for all that you do to get our learners, our young learners, and all of our learners in a good place and ready for success in life. So thank you so much. So with that, members, what I'm thinking we're going to do is have our amazing House research team walk us through the spreadsheets, and then certainly we'll open up to questions the members may have. But I'm thinking that's probably the best thing to do is we'll do that. And so please hang on to your questions if you have any. We are so lucky, Minnesota is so lucky to have the amazing House research staff. I mean, in particular for our team, Annie Mock, and Doug Berg and Emily Adrians, and just nobody works any harder than these folks do. If we can turn to Doug Berg and have you walk through the HHS portion of things, and I think the plan is then to turn to Emily Adrians, and Annie Mock will be available for questions. So Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair and members, I hope everybody can see the screen at this point. I'm sharing a version of the spreadsheet.
I can see it, Mr. Berg, and I'm guessing other folks can too. All right. If anybody has trouble, please speak up. But otherwise, yeah, please continue.
All right. Just a couple of comments before we move forward that haven't come out yet. The agreement involving childcare involves only federal resources on the sheet that I'm about to go through. They are childcare development block grant funds, and will come in the next page to the childcare stabilization funds. There are no general fund costs on this sheet. There is a related general fund item on the main spreadsheet for human services that includes $24,000 over 4 years to implement the rate changes. But other than that, this is entirely paid for with federal funds. Starting on line four, you'll see the most complicated item here, which is the rate change item. This represents the CCDBG funding to take the CCAP rate to the 40th percentile for infants and toddlers, the 30th percentile for others. It implements the 21 and 24 surveys only, but does not go to the current survey. And it includes $15 million a year for new basic sliding fee costs for 3 years, and then it reprioritizes the basic sliding fee wait list for 3 years. So there's quite a bit going on inside that line. Moving down to line six, this is an item paid for both in the CCDBG funds here and in, we'll come to another item that does the same thing in the stabilization fund. which is child care facility revitalization grants. Moving down, we have the family child care regulation modernization item the House came out with originally. The Family Child Care Advisory Committee is funded. And I should note all of the CCDBG money and most of the stabilization money is appropriated in fiscal 22, but the agency can carry it forward and it will be spent over a 3 or 4 year period, depending. Well, some of it are individual items, but these will be all appropriated in 22 and carried forward for use in the years that they need to be used across the 4 year horizon. The Family Child Care One-Stop Assistance Network is funded. The updates to the Family Child Care website with the frequently asked questions and other information. The Ombudsman for Child Care was created. There is $1 million for retain grants, $2 million for teach grants. The child care center regulation modernization, in addition to the family one I had mentioned, the parent aware evaluation and validation study, the child care and early education working group, the child care and early education governance report is funded. There is a fairly substantial item for IT and system improvements related to child care licensing, CCAP rates, the develop system, so a pretty substantial modernization of our IT platform surrounding child care. The report on child care participation of foster care kids in early education and child care. There is an item that is paying for background study fees for childcare workers as we come out of COVID, and essentially making it so that childcare workers don't have to pay twice for background checks. So this item picks up the cost of that. There is an item for administration of federal CCAP funds. The Family Child Care or CCAP coordination report is funded. The child care workforce development grants are funded here. And I will note, if you look over 4 years out of the CCAP funding, this is a total of $280,802,000 in child care enhancements, again, paid for entirely with federal funding. Moving on to the Child Care Stabilization Fund, which again is a federal fund. Members will remember that we, as a state, received $324,198,000. This has an item for child care business training. And then the other part of the item I mentioned before, this is the stabilization part of the child care facility revitalization grants. There's an item, the same item also funded in child care CCDBG grants. The bulk of this, the federal law requires that 90% of it at least be used for monthly grants to child care providers. So $304,398,000 of this federal grant money is for that purpose. And again, these funds carry over a nearly 3 year time frame that they can be used. The workforce development grants, this is another item that has funding in both the CCDBG and here in the stabilization fund. There is funding for the alternate licensing models project. There's $1.5 million for the Family Friend and Neighbor Caregiver Program, and there is $200,000 for the Family Child Care Shared Services Pilot. I'll mention another thing that is not here but is funded in Human Services with general fund federal HCBS money relating to child care with, there's both a parenting with a disabilities pilot and a child care for item for disabled children. Those are considered disability grant programs and are in the human services world, but they affect parents and kids and childcare. So those are on the HHS sheet. And you'll see, members, that this spends the entire $324,198,000 of the stabilization fund. And Mr. Chair, that's the high level overview.
Thank you, Mr. Bergen. I just want to clarify for folks that the final line in that sheet, the final line with content, the one that says grants for childcare for children with disabilities, that's what Mr. Bergen was just referring to. We had funded that through childcare federal dollars, and in the end, it is funded in the bill, but instead through home and community-based services dollars, HCBS funding for folks with disabilities. And so that, even though it's blank, it is in fact funded. It's just not funded through either of these childcare funds. So I hope folks can see the range of what got funded here. What I'm inclined to do is to have Ms. Adrians go, and then we'll move to questions, if any. So Ms. Adrians.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and everyone. Is that pretty visible for everyone?
It is for me, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So as Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor both referenced, there was not that much change in the education side of the programs that this committee had jurisdiction over. And so what this shows is just the early education programs. And so of the biennial total that is spent in the area, around $345 million. The only change is here on line 210. I believe it was referenced, the early childhood family education aid. And this this program, it's linked to any increases in the formula allowance. So since that formula allowance was increased by 2.45% in fiscal year 22, and then in fiscal year 23, that formula increases by 2%. So there's a corresponding increase in this program as well. And that amount is about $3.6 million in the first biennium, and then just over $4 million in the second biennium. And Mr. Chair, that's about it for this side. As was referenced, I should mention the VPK program, the voluntary pre-K program, it was decided early that should stay with the education committee, just because all of the funding for that, it starts under the general education area of the budget. And the bulk of that has historically been in the education finance committee. And that spending, it's about $46 million in the fiscal 22 and 23 biennium. To maintain those 4,000 seats, excuse me. And then for the children's museums that Representative Daphne talked about, that increase was $150,000 in fiscal 22 and $150,000 in fiscal year 23 for those three museums that he talked about.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. And so so folks can see some good progress across these bills, but certainly plenty more to do for young kids. So with all that, wondering if members have any questions about any of this. We'll see if folks do. We'll give a minute. I'll highlight just a couple more things as we give folks just another minute to see. Representative Wazlewick, yeah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question. Just want to thank you and Representative Pryor and Chair Daphne for all the work you did in really pressing forward with our early childhood initiatives and all the things that we wanted to get done. As others have stated, we didn't get everything we wanted, but we did get a significant amount of things helped a lot by the federal funds. So just wanted to throw that out there and thank all of you for all the work you did to really prioritize early childhood and get us some wins this session.
Thank you, Representative Wazlewick. And I'll note, as I said at the very beginning, that the work that you led, Representative Damuth participated in as well, the Family Child Care Task Force, that was one particular area where that hard work between sessions really paid off, that the work that you all did were able to really implement a lot of reforms in the area of our early care and learning providers, and especially our family child care providers. So thank you so much. I did want to comment for members to just point out to you per Mr. Berg's note about the use of federal funds. On the HHS side, and really, as you see, there wasn't much movement on the education side. This was, other than those VBK slots, this was entirely federally funded, with the exception of about a $24,000 general fund cost for systems work over the next 4 years. We actually had, I think, $1.3 million in savings in the general fund for HHS that was generated through a CCAP change. So we were actually a significant proportionally net contributor to the rest of the HHS budget. From out of early childhood, in terms of general fund spending. And not only is this funding through federal funds over the next 4 years, in fact, the CCAP changes are funded through federal funds even in years 5 and 6. I will note that that is not a standard that other areas of spending within the HHS budget was necessarily held to. It was something that the Senate insisted on. Of course, a lot of the negotiations are confidential, but this part I can talk about because there were a series of public letters that went back and forth, so folks can kind of see that. And that was a significant source of disagreement and negotiation over how much we could make commitments in these next 4 years that might have some state spending obligations in years 5 and 6. In the end, the CCAP rate changes do not have any state obligations, even in years 5 and 6. It's obviously a significant rate increase, which I'm really thrilled about. On the other hand, I do think it's important that we recognize that our state has an interest at our state level in making sure that young kids get off to a great start and that early care and learning is available for families so that parents can work, so employers can expand, and that, again, so the kids are set up for success. So that's something that I guess what I'll note from looking at Mr. Berg's spreadsheet again, and Ms. Adrian's as well, is that this is really good, and there's going to continue to be a lot that we're going to need to do in the budget in 2 years and 4 years, and I would even argue next year as well, plenty more to do. Any other questions that folks have? I'm not seeing anything, and so again, a great thanks I'd mentioned to the nonpartisan staff. I also want to thank our amazing committee administrator has been at my side, Polly Sergfenik, and committee legislative assistant Shanika Chambers, and partisan researchers who do just incredible work, not only for their caucuses, but really for the state of Minnesota, Marish Beltrani-Rudquist and Jody Withers, who I know serves his members very, very well. We are very lucky to have this incredible staff. So members, I'm not seeing any other questions at all. I really appreciate the chance to work with you all, and we'll see if we may have a hearing or two over the interim. But with that, I will thank you all again. And with that, we are adjourned. Take care.